From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the Ides of March 2019. Checking the calendar, the Greater Milwaukee Golf Show is this weekend at State Fair Park. Also this weekend, the Phantom of the Opera wraps up its run at the PAC. The Bucks are home Sunday with the 76ers, and in less than 2 weeks, it's opening day for the Milwaukee Brewers. And speaking of the Brew Crew, after coming within one game of the World Series, each player received a playoff check for $123,000. And in a very generous move, the players voted a full share to their legendary play-by-play man, Bob Uecker. And in a classy move of his own, the Hall of Fame broadcaster donated his check to charity. Mr. Baseball often claims, sporting goods companies used to pay me not to endorse their products. But that's not true. But what is true is Bob Uecker belongs in the front row. And finally, the national restaurant chain Del Taco is known for serving French fries with their tacos. Well, now they have a new menu item. It's scented hand soap. Why, I don't know. But it's not just regular soap. It smells like French fries. It's called Eau de French Fry. Can't you just wait for the shampoo that smells like ketchup or deodorant that smells like a burrito? In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Steve Giles, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Mark Amateus.
Well, thank you, Max. Stocks got back to their winning ways after taking a small step back last week. This week, tacks on to an already strong rally for 2019, which has stretched across all 11 sectors of the S&P 500. Markets are now within closing distance of the 2018 highs that were set last September. Investors appear to be watching economic data with more intensity as fears of a global slowdown weigh. This week provided a fair amount of data that could provide relief to some investors. Well, it was a very good week. If you take a look at the tech-heavy NASDAQ for the week, NASDAQ up 3.8% or 280 points to close at 7689. The S&P 500 was up 2.9% or 79 points to close at 2822. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 1.6%, 398 points to close at 25848. Yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury fell from 2.63 to 2.59%. So for the year, again, the NASDAQ up 16.1%, including dividends, the S&P 500 up 13.1%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11.5%. And that's a quick look at the week in review. Joel, we had a whole host of economic data reports come out this week. One thing that kind of interested me was we had four different reports that kind of talk about inflation, if you will. One was the Consumer Price Index, one the Producer Price Index. Let's see, we had the January job openings, and we had capacity utilization. So, you know, all of those things lend themselves to giving us a look at inflation. I think three of those four actually pointed to more subdued inflation, and only one pointed to higher inflation. Why don't you talk maybe about those different indicators we got this week?
Yeah, sure, Mark. Thanks. So the Consumer Price Index is the broadest measure that we have of inflation, and that's kind of a lot of times what we talk when we talk inflation. That's what we're talking about is the Consumer Price Index, and you know. Again, you know, looking month to month at some of these isn't as telling as looking at the trends. And for the Consumer Price Index, it was the first time going up in 3 months. So, you know, that's showing a little bit of inflation. But if you look at the longer term, the year to year, when you take out things like energy and food costs, because those are very volatile month to month. But if you look year to year for the core Consumer Price Index, that was up 2.1%, which was down. So the previous 3 months, it was 2.2%. And the the 61-year average for that core consumer price index is 3.7%. So it's another reminder that we're pretty low inflation these days, and the Fed target is about 2%. So we're a little bit above that, but we're in that neighborhood. And we also had the capacity utilization numbers that came out today. That's a way of looking at the less capacity that industrial companies have, that's a sign that we're closer to higher inflation, and that eased off a little, especially for manufacturing. So there's another sign that inflation isn't that big of a deal right now. But you mentioned the job openings number, and again, we're seeing with that, and we're also seeing from the jobless claims that there's a tight labor market, and we've got job openings far outnumbering the number of people who are looking for jobs. So you've got to expect that sometime that's going to push wages up. We've seen a little bit of that, not probably to the degree that you'd expect, but that's what's going to set off inflation at some point.
We also talked a couple weeks ago about the numbers, economic numbers relating to home sales and what a big part of the economy that is. We got another number this week, the new home sales, and that was lower than expected, down from December about 7% and down a little more than 4% from January of last year. Talk a little bit about what we see there and how it relates to kind of historical numbers, what we might look forward to.
Sure. I think we've, with a lot of the housing numbers, we've seen that we probably had a recent peak around November of 2017. And even though a lot of the numbers are still above where we were when we entered the recession back in 2008, they're still historically kind of low. I mean, they're certainly down from the peaks that we had in 2005, 2006. New home sales, again, looking at the trend, the pace of sales was down 6.9% from December, 4.1% from January of last year. And the recent high there was we were selling at a rate of 712,000 houses a month back in November of 2017, and the latest one was 607,000. And that's also showing, part of the consumer picture. We started the week with retail sales, and although they went up a little bit after 2 months of weakness, at this point in the cycle, we're showing that the economy's getting a little long in the tooth.
Well, and Joel, I don't think that a slowing home sale number is that dire. As you know, we have suffered from a very, very low amount of inventory in the housing market, and a little bit slower home sales can help to replenish that inventory. It's the first time that inventory has risen the first month in the last 3 months that inventory has gone up. A lot of the pricey housing market from last year is due in part to not having much inventory. And if there aren't enough houses out there and you have too many buyers, that's going to certainly drive up the prices of what little inventory there is. So a slowdown in new home sales, at least the way that I'm looking at it, from 30,000 feet up, if you will, isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Well, and of course, Steve, I think spring tends to set the pace for home sales because you have all these folks who kind of waited through the winter to see how things were going to shake out, and now they're ready to list or they're ready to go looking. And so I think we'll have more data in the next couple of months on what that looks like. But I think that seeing that data is incredibly important for two reasons. In addition, Mark, to what you mentioned, that housing sales are such a big piece of the overall economy and drive so much of the rest of the economy. But, one, because much of what most people think about housing is based on anecdote, that, their neighbor was able to sell their house in a couple of days. And so that tells you about the state of the housing market. And maybe a lot of that is influenced by the second piece that's important to remember about housing, which is that this is all very regional dependent, that despite the fact that we're, this one country of 50 different states and, multiple different regions, that you can have some pretty hot prices on the West Coast. And at the same time in the Midwest, you might not be seeing the same level of pricing power that you can get in San Francisco or in LA. And so, I think looking through some of that data also tells you more broadly about the strength of this economy and tells you more broadly about the strength of some of the backbone of the economy in terms of some of the manufacturing, in terms of some of the small businesses, if only because it tells you more than just that anecdotal data. And so, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see where we go, you know, especially in the housing market, because of the importance of household formation over the next couple of months.
And housing is an important domestic part of the economy, but that's actually, you know, more important as we're seeing more signs of the global economy weakening.
Kyle, you know, when I talk to clients and they ask how their portfolio is doing, they quite often equate it or compare it, if you will, to indexes, the S&P 500, the Dow. And that's natural because that's what they see and read about all the time, whether it be on the news or on the internet or in the financial papers. But, you know, you have an interesting take on why customers, why investors should be careful of comparing, you know, their portfolios and how they're doing with these indexes, beyond just the fact that they're not just invested in the Dow or the S&P 500. They're also invested, you know, in overseas stocks. They're invested in bonds, et cetera. Talk about an index or two and how a client or an investor can get in trouble by focusing on an index.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I think we had a great example this week with the tragedy that happened with the Boeing Airlines plane that crashed over the weekend. And, you know, it pretty quickly took Boeing's stock down. And if you're just looking at one measure of stocks, say the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's just 30 industrial-based stocks here in the U.S., Boeing is more than 10% of that index, or was more than 10% of that index. Not anymore. You see a big decline in that biggest piece of the index, and it can have a pretty significant outsized impact on the index itself. And so you look, you know, you mentioned the numbers at the open this week, but the Dow's up about half of what the S&P was up this week, and that is entirely due to that one position in that one price-weighted index, price-weighted being the way that the underlying stocks are allocated to the index and weighted within that index. You know, it doesn't really say much, though, more broadly about our economy. It doesn't say much about the way that our investors invest, because we're not focused on just those 30 stocks, either in what drives the U.S. economy or in the way that we look at investing for portfolios. And so, you know, while it's incredibly important for investors to have something to compare themselves to, while it's important to say that this is how U.S. stocks have done or non-U.S. stocks have done, I think it's a bit short-sighted to say that any one of those indexes that we so often talk about is really representative of what we're trying to accomplish as investors. And so a lot of times it's looking at a combination of indexes, building some kind of benchmark for your portfolio that reflects what it is you're actually doing. But over and above that, recognizing that, you know, maybe one 30-stock index, even if it is often quoted within the Wall Street Journal and other financial publications, maybe isn't indicative of what's going on in the economy or in markets more broadly.
Well, and in addition, different indexes are weighted differently, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's something that I think that maybe investors don't really realize.
Yeah, so you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I mentioned that it's price-weighted, so the higher your price is, if you're one of those 30 members, the bigger your allocation is, the bigger your weight is within that index. But you have other indexes. You know, I think we're more favorable towards the S&P 500 because it's market capitalization-weighted. The more you have an impact in markets, the bigger your actual size of your company is with respect to how many shares trade hands and the price of those shares, the more of a weight you have in that S&P index. And I think that's a bit more representative of kind of the way investors behave more broadly, if only because it's weighted based on how big those companies are. However, you know, again, I think the broader principle still holds, and that is that not any one of those indexes is ever going to truly represent what it is you're trying to do as an investor.
Mike, before the show, we were talking a little bit about productivity and the breadth of the market advance. Talk a little bit about what you saw in some of the research that you did.
Yeah, so with the rally that the markets had, we're almost at the end of the first quarter now. So you look back at 2017, part 2018, as you guys know, a lot of the market growth was driven by the FANG stocks. I mean, they drove a big chunk of the returns that you saw. Well, this year what you're seeing is a larger number of stocks are contributing to that, and that just contributes. I think that's just a much more positive for the overall broader markets. Kyle mentioned Boeing before. Of all the 30 stocks in the Dow, they're the only one that hasn't remained strong. All the other 29 have had strong weeks. They have had strong quarters. Boeing, obviously, for its tragic circumstances, is the outlier. So I think if that continues, we see a larger number of stocks drive the market growth. I think that can only be a positive for investors going forward.
And, Mike, to tie this in with Kyle's comments about indexing, keep in mind that in 2007, we had a huge run-up in the bank stocks, and they were a much larger percentage of the index. In 1999, early 2000, we had a huge run-up in just the growth technology stocks. If you didn't own growth in 99, you did not make money. So the point that market breadth signals a healthy market is a very good takeaway for investors year to date.
And technical traders look quite a bit at things like advancers versus decliners, the number of stocks within an index that are moving higher versus the number that are moving lower, to point to, you know, how strong a particular rally or how strong a particular correction is. And I think most of what we've seen from a technical aspect is that, you know, the number of advancers supports the fact that this is, has been a pretty strong run. And so, you know, while long-term those technicals don't mean all that much, we're fundamental investors, you know, it is encouraging to get some support from, you know, those more technical indicators.
Joel, so much of investing is psychological, how people feel, whether it be what we call the wealth effect, or what have you, can help determine how the market performs, at least over the short term. You know, in the long term, it's all about interest rates and earnings. We talk about that all the time. But there were a couple data points that came out this week. Consumer sentiment, for example, that was higher than expected. You also had a retail sales number that came out. And those kind of point to how the general public is feeling. Talk about what we saw there this week.
Sure, Mark. And Kyle alluded to that, too, in real estate, how, you know, you see if your neighbor's house is selling and what it's selling for, and that makes you feel good about, you know, whether you're going to put your own house on the market. So the consumer sentiment numbers, those were, it's a kind of a preliminary look at a survey that the University of Michigan has done for decades, and that's improving. It was down a couple of months ago, especially because of the federal government shutdown and all sorts of things can affect consumers are fickle. So it's an interesting, you know, kind of a monthly gauge, twice a month gauge for this one, at how consumers are feeling about things. And one of the interesting findings from the latest survey is that the households that make up the bottom two-thirds of income, that those households really are the ones who moved the consumer sentiment in the latest reading, because they feel their expectations are higher for the income that they'll be getting later in the year, and their expectations are lower for inflation. So, you know, their real income, they're expecting to have that go up. And how that fits in with the retail numbers is, you know, we know that consumer spending drives two-thirds of our economy. So if people are feeling better, you know, about their incomes going up, they're more apt to want to buy things.
Well, and Joel, they're getting that from what is a tight labor market and the prospect of higher wages.
Right. It's all tied together.
Kyle, we also had some kind of solid numbers come out. By that, I mean some real economic numbers come out on industrial production and durable goods orders. You know, you look at the manufacturing sector, and it's not nearly as important as the service sector, but it's still meaningful, and maybe even more meaningful as far as kind of telegraphing how the overall economy is doing going forward. What were your thoughts on some of those indicators we had this week?
You know, I think it's so interesting. As you look back at the numbers, not just for this week, but for, you know, the past couple of months where we've had this discrepancy between interest rates and stock market prices, and then you need to look through to what's causing that. Typically, you see bond prices move higher. You see interest rates move lower as they have. when the economy starts to show some signs of weakness. And we saw a little bit of that earlier in the year. We saw that maybe we were headed for a bit of a slowdown. And, you know, I think we talked last week on the podcast about this idea that maybe we could get to that soft landing. And if we can get to that soft landing, that speaks to, you know, I think a market, a stock market that should see some positives, but also that there aren't really any signs then that inflation should take off. There aren't really any signs then that the Fed should have to respond. And so that allows rates to move a little bit lower. And so the data we saw this week from durable goods, the manufacturing data that we've seen, I think it supports the fact that, yeah, we're not headed off a cliff just yet, that there's still a little bit of life left in this economy, that even if we do potentially see a recession 18 months from now or even a year from now, that the data so far continues to point to an economy that's continuing to plod along, that should support markets where they are and maybe let them run a little bit higher. And again, it also supports that discrepancy between what bonds have done and what stock prices have done, because it's rare to see both of those trade higher as we have so far this year.
Well, folks, that does it for another week of Money Talk. We appreciate you listening. We love doing the show. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.